The Agriculture, Conservation, and Resiliency Committee will now come to order. Missy, please call the roll.
Chair Buchanan?
Here.
Vice Chair Roth?
Here.
Ranking Member Skidmore?
Here.
Representative Abbott?
Here.
Representative Alvarez?
Yes, here.
Representative Antone? Representative Bartleman?
Yes.
Representative Botana?
Here.
Representative Brackett?
Here.
Representative Usada Cabrera? Representative Cassell?
Here.
Representative Cheney?
Yes, here.
Representative Esposito? Representative Hunchowski?
Here.
Representative Keen?
Here.
Representative Mooney?
Here.
Representative Steele?
Here.
Representative Trunell?
Here.
Representative Tuck?
Here.
Thank you, Missy. Members, and just an announcement, so I want to make sure, I remind everyone to make sure you move your electronic devices to silent or turn them off for the duration of our meeting. Today, members, we'll have five bills before us, and we'll be getting started with our very own Vice Chair, Representative Rick Roth. Representative Roth, you are recognized to present HB 1159, Food Recovery.
Thank you, Chair, for this opportunity to present this good bill. This is a little bit of deja vu. We ran this bill again. We ran it last year. I do believe we made some significant improvements in the bill from last year. Just a little point of information. The bill did not pass last year, went through two committees in the House, one in the Senate, but it was implemented through an appropriation. And so there is actually a pilot program, which we're jokingly calling the Roth pilot program, that is, and currently it's just getting started. There's only been a total of $175,000 of food purchased with this new pilot program. It's done thanks to a $5 million appropriation we got last year. Members, this is a pilot program. This bill is a pilot program. And it does direct FDACs to implement for food recovery entities. This program is a reimbursement program. It's funded by annual appropriations. So it does require, there's a $5 million appropriation in the bill, but it does require, if we put it into law, that there will have to be a separate appropriation in order for the policy to be implemented every year. The purpose of the program is to be totally accountable and transparent, and all appropriations are used to reimburse the purchase of food at a discounted price. We also are including 2 cents a pound for distribution cost, which in most cases covers the cost unless you have to go outside and rent a separate vehicle to do that. The funds, the most important part of the bill, in my opinion, is the funds will be dispersed based on an actual invoice where they purchase the product. And there also will be other additional data. This, in my mind, is a public-private partnership. We're talking about using government funds to move food in Florida. We believe it will increase not only the quality of the food, because that gives the food recovery entity leverage to get the best food possible that day. It will also increase the quantity and the variety of fresh food. I'm already hearing that this proviso language, we had this from the bill, from the appropriation last year, is started a food box program where you're getting protein and other products in the box, not just fruits and vegetables. So already it's expanding the variety of fresh fruit. We believe this program will encourage more food producers to communicate with their local food banks. So we also believe that it will translate not only into more food being sold at a discount, will also translate into more food donated for free. And then the data obtained from this program should lead to higher appropriations in future years. Chairman, that's the bill.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Roth. Members, we're in questions. Representative Cassell, and a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for this good bill. I'm curious, and it might be an error in the drafting. When you look at subsection C, lines 44 through 50, it details what these food recovery entities must do, primarily that they must negotiate and pay a discounted price. But then when you turn to page 3, what you're asking them to certify in writing, there's no requirement that they put in writing on the invoice the discounted price. So I think we need to, I'm just curious, is it your intent that in order to certify the negotiated price, that they need to include the discounted price in the certification?
Representative Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you for that good question. And I think you are misunderstanding the bill a little bit. The way to think about it is you have an invoice that everybody does. Mm-hmm. What does the invoice say? It says this many pounds of sweet corn at this price, this many pounds of radishes at that price. It says the name of the vendor, the location, and it says, you know, but it doesn't say, you know, it does say the price, but it doesn't say the market price. So I'm requiring the FRE to submit data that they get from the packing house that says this is the date we harvested it and this is the market price. I think of this as logic, right? When you're buying something, you get to make conditions yourself. You say to the packing house, I'm going to buy this from you at a discounted price. I need the market price, today's current market price, and I need the harvest date. And so that data will be supplied, and it's the responsibility of the packing house, not the FRE, to get that information. Hope you understood that.
Members, questions? Representative Cassell, are you good? Do you want to follow up?
I'm fine, thank you, Mr.
Chair. Members, any further questions? Any further questions? See no further questions. We do have an amendment. Representative Roth, you are recognized to explain amendment barcode 313957.
Yes, it says line 7, engage in food recovery and distribution that has at least 10 years experience. So we wanted to lower the bar a little bit to allow more FREs to participate.
Thank you for that explanation. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? No public testimony. Members, debate? Debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate on the amendment, Representative Roth, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. I'll make this very brief. I've been working on this for 4 years. I do not pretend to be the smart guy that's got this all figured out. This is still a works in progress. The purpose of this bill is to move the ball forward. I did make significant changes in this bill to put more of the leverage.
Representative Roth, we're on the amendment.
Oh, on the amendment. I'm sorry. I waive close on the amendment. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Representative Roth. Is there any opposition to the amendment? Any opposition? See no opposition. Let's show the amendment is adopted. We're now back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill as amended? Up first, we have Trip Hunter with Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association. Waiving in support. Up next, Jeff Scalia with Florida Association of Counties. Waving in support. Up next, we have Nancy Lothar with Florida PTA. Waving in support. Up next, we have Ida Fernandez with AARP. Waving in support. Up next, we have Robbie Holroy with Palm Beach County Food Bank. Waving in support. Is there any other public testimony? Seeing no further public testimony, members, we're in debate. Is there debate on the bill as amended? Seeing no debate, Representative Roth, you're recognized to close.
Okay, again, I'll try to close. Thank you, Chair. Again, I do not purport to have it all figured out. This has been a work in progress for the last 4 years. I did make the bill simpler this year. I am putting the onus on the food recovery entities. They do have to certify that the food does meet their quality standards. They do have to certify that they're not going to sell the product back into a secondary market. But the main thought is by giving pots of money to food recovery entities and to be able to buy at a discounted price, they will have more conversations with farmers, and they will fight to get produce of higher quality at a lower price through the negotiation process. So therefore, I took out the 7 days because to me it's just putting hamstrings, because sometimes 8-day-old produce is just as good as 6-day-old produce. So with that, Chair, I ask for your support.
Missy, please call the roll.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Alvarez?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cassell? Cheney?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Keene?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Roth? Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trunell?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes. Members, by your vote, show the bill is reported favorably with the committee substitute. Congratulations, Mr. Vice
Chair.
Thank
you, members. Thank you, Chair.
Up next, we're going to be hearing from Representative Yeager. Representative Yeager, you are recognized to explain HB 1641, regulation of auxiliary containers.
Thank you, Chair. Roth and Ranking Member Skidmore. I believe there's a strike-all amendment we're going to have on this, too, Chair, if you want to.
That's correct. Maybe just give us a little flavor, and we'll get to the strike-all.
Okay, perfect. In 2010, the state preempted the regulation of retail auxiliary containers. As part of that bill, the legislature directed the Florida DEP to conduct a study analyzing the need for further regulation. This legislature subsequently directed the department to refresh the study in 2021, again analyzing the need for any further regulation. As we sit today, this report has been completed twice, and the legislature has twice determined there is no need for additional regulation. This bill simply provides clarity as to which items made out of which types of materials are covered in the preemption. We do want to clarify this bill does not expand to cover plastic straws, for your information on this. And that is the bill.
Thank you for that explanation. Members, there is an amendment of which is making a definitional change in the bill, but we'll move on to questions now on the bill as presented. Is there questions on the bill as presented? Any questions? Representative Mooney.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative, for the conversation we had yesterday.
Absolutely.
Greatly appreciated, and I told you how I felt about the bill. I've had a plastic bill for 4 years now. It's gone nowhere. To set the table, you know, I come out of the grocery business, so I understand the nuances, and I understand the difficulties. This is not about just elimination. But that said, going through the bill, I guess I asked myself at the end of the day, there says there's no fiscal impact, but how do you think the changes are going to affect local governments? I mean, they're continuing to clear out there's wastewater and their stormwater runoff, and I hate to say it, but we're all guilty of it to some degree of creating that claim. How can you say there's no impact to local governments when, in fact, they're continuing to clean out stormwater drains?
Representative Yeager, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Rep. Mooney. It was a great conversation yesterday, and appreciate that. So, you know, I think that's indeterminate with this, right, to try to figure that out. Most activity is going to go on anyhow, regardless of what happens here. So I think I'd be just shooting numbers in the wind to try to figure that out. But, you know, I think we've got to continue to fatten those factors of doing stormwater and stuff in the counties, right? But I think the most part, it's going to continue no matter what you do with this bill.
Members, questions? Questions of the sponsor. Representative Cassell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Yeager. How does your bill impact current local governments that might already have, like, a single-use plastic ban ordinance in place?
Representative Yeager, you're recognized.
Yeah, so this bill does preempt all regulation to the state.
Questions? Representative Cassell.
So to the extent my city currently has a single-use plastic ban and prohibits plastic water bottles, bags from being brought to city parks or sitting buildings, this bill, despite that law already being on the books, this bill would render that ordinance null and void.
Representative Yeager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. That is my understanding, yes.
Members, questions? Questions? Representative Keene, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm new. You may recognize that. I don't have a copy of the report. I'd like to get a copy. Can you furnish that to me?
Representative Yeager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you and welcome. Rep. Keene. So, yes, I can. It's on the website, on the DEP's website.
Members, questions? Is there any other questions for the sponsor? Ranking member, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. In sort of segueing from Representative Keene's question, are the elements of that report reflected in this legislation? What did whatever that report was able to provide, is that reflected here in this piece of legislation?
Representative Yeager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Skidmore, for the question. In a sense, no, because the legislature had a chance twice other times to take any action with that, if it, any further regulation. They didn't see any need to, so we're clarifying it now to just clean it up.
Members, questions? Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, we do have an amendment brought forward by Representative Steele. Representative Steele, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 483963. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. It's a strike all amendment. It clarifies the language on auxiliary containers, and it adds cross references to terms for public food service establishments, food establishments, and retail. That is the amendment.
Members, questions on the amendment? Are there questions on the amendment? Representative Cheney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Buchanan. Rep. Steele, is this a friendly amendment?
Representative, are you asking through Representative Yeager?
Yes, Representative Yeager, excuse me.
Representative Yeager, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Cheney. Absolutely, it's a friendly amendment.
Members, questions on the amendment? Seeing no further questions on the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? No public testimony. We're on debate. Is there debate on the amendment? Any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Steele, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close.
Is there any opposition to the amendment? Any opposition? Seeing no opposition, let's show the amendment is adopted. We're now on the bill as amended. Representative Yeager, actually, we're in public testimony on the bill. Up first, we have Andy Palmer with American Recycling Plastic Bag Alliance. Waving in support. Up next, we have Chad Cundy with Florida Chamber of Commerce. Waving in support. Up next, we have Rick Myers representing himself. Waving in opposition. Up next, we have Ryan Smart with Florida Springs Council.
Good job. My
handwriting is a lot like mine.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Good job.
You're recognized.
Ryan Smart, Executive Director of the Florida Springs Council. My day job is mostly reviewing legislation, litigation, research, stuff like that. But in the weekends, what I like to do is get out in the water and in the woods, and I do it by volunteering for marine and freshwater cleanup groups. These groups recruit volunteers all over the state to go out and pick up trash out of our waterways, off of our shores, out of our creeks. And I can tell you firsthand, when we go out, what we find are the things that you are not going to allow to be managed under this bill. I pick up by the hundreds single-use containers, beer cans, plastic grocery bags, and every kind of disposable wrapping you can imagine. I've picked up exactly one reusable water bottle off the bottom of the Itchituckney River. Last year, the cleanup groups I volunteer with, 75% or 57,000 pounds of trash is the things you are not regulating by passing this bill. 75% of the trash that we pick up. It's notable that many of our state parks have regulations right now that prevent these things from going on the waters. And if this is gonna override those, you need to be talking to DEP. Because the Itchituckney River cannot have single-use plastics. The Rainbow River cannot have single-use plastics. That is a huge flaw in this bill I haven't heard anyone realize. You are going to jeopardize the most important resources we have. And if it doesn't cover that, then ask yourselves why our local government shouldn't have the same ability to protect their natural resources that you're giving to state parks. Yesterday, I heard Senator Mayfield speak eloquently about how we need to stop pollution at the source. That's not just nitrogen pollution, that's trash too. And this bill makes it impossible for local governments and the state government to do that. So if you pass this bill, hopefully we can recruit enough volunteers to clean up the mess that this bill creates. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Travis Moore with Oceana. Mr. Moore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you to Representative Yeager for his open-door policy and willing to have these discussions and look forward to continuing those. And I do not mean to be cute by this comment, but last year the legislature passed Senate Bill 170, the preemption to end all preemptions. And I was thinking this morning, I'm like, so I guess that meant it's shame on me. I guess that meant that the preemption to end all preemptions just meant for that session, because here we are again with an expansion of a preemption. In 2008, this legislature said we have a problem. They passed legislation to have DEP do a study, and they said, at that time we're going to put a pause on local governments being able to do certain things while we undertake this study. And then we're going to be doing this study periodically. So then in 2010, as the sponsor said, the first study was done. There were recommendations made and to deal with this on a statewide basis, and the state failed to do so. Just decided that, let's not do that, but they didn't remove local government's ability to do anything. Then in 2021, they were supposed to do it every 10 years. They didn't, but in 2021, they did the study again and again made recommendations to you. And I would encourage you, before you go, and thank you for the representative's comments on this. I mean, I think you should probably make sure you read the study and the recommendations. But again, made several recommendations, again, none of which the state has done. And then now we're expanding the preemption because we're saying state isn't going to do anything, but in the meantime, local governments, you're not able to do anything, and we're going to expand the things that you can't do. And as Representative Cassell said, it actually gets rid of the things that they actually have done. We have some real concerns about this. Also, in the Miami Herald last week, talking about the city of Miami is now going to be or contemplating putting their garbage and using, rail and to ship it to Georgia. I mean, at some point, we're going to probably have to either deal with it on a state level, and if you wanted to take up statewide policy like Representative Mooney's bills have done, that would be fantastic. But if you're going to choose not to do that and not follow the recommendations of your state agency, which is certainly your prerogative, then at least get out of the way of your local governments that are saying we're being buried in trash and, we need to be dealing with it. So with that, I would respectfully ask you to vote no on this and at least send the signal that, maybe we should be taking a hard look at what our state studies are recommending. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Up next in public testimony, we have Emma Heyducey with Surf Rider Foundation. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Emma Heyducey with the Surf Rider Foundation in opposition. Surf Rider Foundation is an ocean protection nonprofit. We have volunteers and members all over the state who, much like Mr. Smart, are out on our beaches, lakes, rivers, waterways, picking up single-use plastic on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis. I'm not sure, much like Mr. Moore, how many of you have read the retail bag study. So I wanted to quote a couple of the findings from DEP within that study. In the study, they found that 97% of local governments and 93% of Florida residents believe that regulation is necessary for containers, wrappings, and disposable plastic bags. That 89% of the local governments and Florida residents who were surveyed believe that additional regulation on these items would be effective, and that 90% of local governments, 82% of Florida residents, and 75% of single-use plastic manufacturers surveyed would be willing to support waste reuse, reduction, and recycling through increased fees. I think those findings are pretty clear, that Floridians and our local governments want additional regulation for single-use plastic items. And nowhere in the findings of the study, nor in the recommendations by DEP, was there support for further expanding or entrenching the existing regulation and preemption on the books. We believe that this legislation is in direct contradiction to the intent and recommendations of that study. DEP also provided a menu of regulatory and non-regulatory actions, including bans on these items, additional fees, requiring certain amounts of recycled content, education programs, implementation of coastal pilots, and other measures like deposit systems. And while there have been countless bills, some introduced by members in this room, Since the initial preemption was passed that reflect agency recommendations, not one has been adopted by this legislature to date. Florida has been in policy paralysis on the issue of addressing single-use plastic items, including the significant fiscal impacts to local governments and environmental impacts to our prized waterways and beaches. If the state would like to preempt the regulation of these items, they need to regulate them in a meaningful way. And if not, they need to restore the authority of local governments to be able to do so. This bill, as we read it, does neither. And it condemns Floridians to a future where we are slumming in plastic instead of clean water. We urge members respectfully to vote down on this bill today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, as we continue in public testimony, I'm now going to hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Roth as I'm going to present in another committee.
Thank you, Chair. Do me a favor, hurry back. We have additional testimony. Is that where we are? Okay, so we have David Cullen with the Sierra Club.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Cullen for Sierra Club, Florida, and I apologize for not having been able to get up with you before this, but as probably comes as no surprise, we are in opposition to this bill. Fundamentally, we have a philosophical disagreement in that we think this is needed. Legislature obviously doesn't at this point, but we think that the ability to regulate single-use containers is needed as policy in the state. 3 years ago, as Ms. Hadesy pointed out, DEP updated its 2010 study, and they found that single-use containers still end up as litter. Evidence of the potential harms of plastic has increased. Microplastics continue to pollute the marine environment and the seafood that is consumed by people. Plastics have been linked to cancer, lung, and liver damage in humans. Yet this bill preempts not only local governments, but also the state from any regulation. That trash is affecting our communities. We need to be able to control it. This bill says the answer is do nothing. That cannot be the answer for Florida. Do nothing. Please vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Christopher Strandberg with Americans for Prosperity. Don't see anybody. We have, Ways and Support, I'm sorry. All right, we have Samantha Padgett with FRLA. Wave and Support. Okay, That is all our public testimony. Members, we are now in debate. Representative Cassell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the bill. As I told you earlier, I am going to have to be down on this. You know, in particular, I represent the city of Hollywood, and the city of Hollywood is known for its environmentally friendly community, and one of those things that we are extremely proud of is our single-use ban. That's prevented in parks and playgrounds and city buildings, and it's really made our community a lot cleaner. And many people move to our community specifically for that reason. So there are many other reasons why I'm down on this bill, but to, you know, take away my city's ability to, you know, pass these regulations, which its residents wants and supports and people moves there. They've spent a lot of money on educating the residents on making sure that they can comply with this, and all of that based on this bill would be for naught. So for that and many other reasons, I'm gonna be down today.
Okay, Representative Hachansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanna thank the representative for the many discussions we've had on this. I was just actually looking up the study. I found it on the DEP website. Thank you to those who let us know about it because we weren't actually given a copy. And I guess what stood out to me is that it says scientific evidence of the potential harms of plastics in the environment has increased since 2010, as has public awareness of the issue. So our voters and the people we serve are paying attention. A little more concerning was that options for the legislature to address single-use carryout packaging concerns are similar to those in 2010. And I have to ask, if we're asking experts, the scientists, the people who understand the science to do these studies, shouldn't we be listening to them? Shouldn't we be implementing the suggestions? There were actually 8 options given in this study that the legislature could take on. And I go back to listening to some of the testimony we had today. There are different areas that have different waterways, so they are even more at risk than maybe a place that's more inland, and it's not as a major effect on that area as it would be for somebody who's in the ocean or near our waterways. And so by limiting and tying the hands of local governments to make the decisions that are best for their areas and the residents in those areas, I just think is a step in the wrong direction. And I hope going forward that instead of just doing studies and putting them on a shelf and no one reading or listening to them, that we have a more debate on them, more discussion on them, and look to how we can take this great material that we have from experts and really put it to use for all our Floridians. Thank you.
Representative Mooney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Again, Rep, thank you for the conversation yesterday. So, again, I come out of retail, so I understand that aspect of it. It's very difficult to work in retail and not have plastic. It's we put ourselves there. It's not like it's, it wasn't, the demons didn't put us there. We put ourselves there. And that's fine at this point. But what's not fine, unfortunately, is that we're not following the recommendations of the DEP, which I think we tasked with doing a job. And with that, the industry in and of itself, and I have to give kudos. A lot of the industries have done a great job of starting to make alternative uses. This isn't about a bad actor, from my opinion. This is just, that's not the issue here. The issue is here is that we spend billions of dollars in the state on resiliency, water quality, cleanup, and then we contradict ourselves by not letting a system sort of work through it. So I represent, obviously, I think, one of the most pristine areas in the world, the Florida Keys. I can totally agree and understand walking a shoreline for 2 hours and collecting over 400 pounds of garbage. Now, obviously, we don't all contribute to that. That comes from around the world via currents. I'm not going to get into the minutiae of how we get there. It's not a matter of why we're there, it's that we're here. When the cardiologists are finding microplastics in heart tissue, that's a little concerning. Not for me. I see the light. I have grandkids. There's young people in this audience. But I think we owe it to ourselves to have we've been letting local communities chip away at this. Like, I was the mayor of a small town. We did not pass ordinance on straws. We went the education way. We said, I'm not going to put anybody's hand on the fire, but we're going to help them understand why we should do this the right way. It was amazing the response we got. It was really amazing how fast people took to education. So if this bill had, say, we should explore maybe being the leader in the country in recycling, that would be amazing. That would be helpful. We all know this. We've all seen statistics on garbage companies. You put your little blue bin out there, and only 20% of it gets recycled, and the rest ends up in a landfill. And then to the point now, Miami-Dade's thinking about a train through the state full of garbage to get to Georgia. So somewhere you got to stop this train from rolling toward Georgia. I mean, it's not going to get better. And again, there's a study done by FIU, which I would encourage anybody in this room to read if you just like to read some really cool statistics. These college kids did 4 years or 3 years of amazing work. The impact to our state and tourism is multi-billion dollars. Our tourists are telling us our beaches are bad. Now, again, nobody's out there throwing sandwich boxes in the water intentionally that I know of, but it's still occurring. And so anything we can do, so I would have loved this bill a little bit better if you just said, hey, we are going to encourage, we're going to educate, we're going to talk about becoming the leader in recycling in the nation. These are the kind of things that I would view as sort of a more forward-looking bill than just sort of kicking that dog that's been asleep for a while. Now I think the dog's going to come to life again, and I think it's going to create a lot of heartache in a lot of areas. And with that, I respectfully am going to have to be down the bill, but I appreciate everything you talked about yesterday.
Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for speaking with me about the bill. I am no fan of preemption, right? I do believe that the government closest to the people is most responsive to the people. And the people should have the opportunity to make these decisions. I don't know what this bill fixes. I don't know how this bill helps us. So we created legislation to do a study through agencies that we have. We expended resources. Those scientists, those experts came back with recommendations twice, and we've done nothing about it. When we have our interim committee meetings, we see so many presentations on all kinds of things. We never saw a presentation on the results of that report or that study. That would have been important for this committee, I think, to hear and discuss. But that didn't happen. So I don't know how this bill helps the state of Florida maintain its reputation for resiliency, for all of the funding that we have put into Florida First, for our climate, all our climate issues. This is counterproductive to all of that. First and foremost, for me, it's the preemption of local government and local communities making decisions for themselves. There are so many instances where it's important that we have statewide standards. This is not one of them for me. This is not even close. And I think Rep. Cassell makes a very valid point. People choose to go to a place where they know that there are certain regulations that improve the environment where they want to live. You're taking that choice away from every Floridian in the state and making the state decide to do nothing, as it was said. So I look forward to further conversation with you as to what this bill does and how it helps us in any way. But because I don't understand what it's doing and why we have not taken any of the recommendations that our experts have provided to us, I'm going to have to be no today.
Representative Cheney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. Yeager, for bringing the bill forward. When I was a city commissioner in my local community, I proposed a city ordinance that would require the sunsetting of styrofoam and non-recyclable to-go containers. And I worked with all of our restaurants and our hotels, and what we landed on was a sunset time frame for them. And they were on board with the ordinance. They actually saw that that was important to their business. Pinellas County is the home to one of the number one beaches in the country. And they understood that their business was dependent on this. So they were supportive as long as we had the sunset time frame so they could clear out their existing inventory and it wouldn't be a financial burden on them. I have a neighbor who actually has a manufacturing company of single-use containers, and he has shifted to all recyclable containers to meet the demand for recyclable single-use containers. So I don't see this bill as harming business in any way. I see it obviously as helping the environment, but I see it actually as helping our businesses, helping tourism, helping our restaurants and our hotels, and manufacturers as the market adjusts to the need that people want.
Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Thank you. I spoke, you're so wonderful. We talked about this, and I really appreciate it. Just for me, I just can't support the preemption. We have a serious trash issue in Broward County. I mean, we're shipping our trash to other parts of the state. They're looking at building an incinerator across the street from the Everglades. And pretty soon, as population continues to grow in Florida, there's going to be no place for our trash. We're going to run out of it, locations. And nobody wants to be next to an incinerator. So I can't support this because I have a local community that actually has a whole task force looking into zero waste and composting in their municipality. And we're eroding local officials' ability to make decisions for their community, and they're very committed to preserving the earth for future generations. So I can't support the preemption. I need to let my local communities do what they think is best. So thank you.
Members, seeing no more hands, Representative Yeager, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for all the feedback, and had some really great conversations this week on this topic, so I appreciate that time and just conversation, and we'll keep that conversation going without a doubt. So, you know, I do think in a time today when we have businesses that are, you know, the cost of doing business today is going up and up in every way, and, you know, I think this does affect small business. To say it doesn't, I think any cost rise on these businesses does affect their business. We have a lot of small businesses that have small margins that this does affect cost of doing business, cost of product. So that is one thing. Number two, I also point you to a study that was done, just came out actually recently, following New Jersey's ban of single-use bags. That actually came out, the report shows that it actually resulted in nearly 3 times increase in plastic consumption for bags. Sometimes our alternative products and alternative bags that we produce for these are actually worse in the full lifespan of the product than the actual plastic containers we're talking about today. So I think we gotta be careful. We don't rule on something on the surface level when you dig down deeper, that it's actually creating more of a bigger problem than we're even aware of. So I think we gotta be smart about that and look at that. The word I hear throughout this was litter. Litter, 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 right? So, you know, I do think there's an opportunity here to maybe crack down our litter laws, right? In Florida, we do have beautiful beaches. I'm a boater, I'm on the water as every weekend I can possibly be on the water, right? So, you know, we want to crack down our littering laws, raise our fines, maybe community service, maybe get these folks that litter to join the parties out there on the beaches to clean up what they've been throwing out in the ground. So littering's been an issue forever. I think we need to crack down on that, and that's a piece I would agree with on that. But with that said, I do think we need to protect small business, and this does that, and I ask for your support today on it, and appreciate the time.
Thank you with that. Missy, please call the roll.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Alvarez?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
No.
Botana?
Yes.
Brackett? Yes. Busada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cassell?
No.
Cheney?
No.
Esposito?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
No.
Keene?
No.
Mooney?
No.
Roth?
Yes.
Skidmore?
No.
Steele?
Yes.
Brunel? Tuck?
Yes.
Buchanan? 11 yeas, 7 nays.
Thank you. By your vote, House Bill 1641 is reported favorably. Thank you, Representative. We're moving on to HB 1187 by Representative Cross, carbon sequestration. Representative Cross, you are recognized to explain 1187.
Thank you very much, Chair, in absence, Chair Buchanan, Vice Chair Roth, and Ranking Member Skidmore. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about HB 1187. The goal behind this bill is to make Florida a leader in carbon storage by utilizing and enhancing the thousands of acres of conservation lands, aquatic ecosystems, working landscapes, and aquaculture that we have. Florida is blessed with phenomenal natural areas and productive agriculture that provide numerous benefits to the people of Florida. Wetlands on cattle ranches store and clean water. Timber plantations provide habitat for endangered bird species. And oyster beds and mangroves protect our shorelines from waves and hurricanes. Now imagine that eating oysters from Apalachicola, oranges from Claremont, or beef from Myakka can also help to store carbon. Carbon is a naturally occurring element, and carbon dioxide is a byproduct of the burning of fossil fuels. Luckily, plants have the ability to take carbon dioxide from the air during photosynthesis and store it in their plant biomass and soils. That process is called carbon sequestration, and when it happens in our aquatic ecosystems, we use the term blue carbon. Terrestrial forests, tropical forests, and even herbaceous or plant non-forested wetlands all store carbon. Studies suggest that many of our coastal habitats, including seagrasses, mangroves, and coastal wetlands, are some of the most productive at storing carbon. So that means with our miles of coastlines and our estuaries, combined with our extensive network of conservation and agricultural areas, Florida's natural places are carbon storage superstars. With something that's this important, it's surprising that we have not done a statewide study on this yet. And so that is what this bill would do. It would develop a task force adjunct to the Department of Environmental Protection to evaluate the role that our agricultural natural areas and aquatic environments play in storing carbon. The task force would include agency heads and appointed members representing agriculture, aquaculture, working lands, the environment, estuaries, and energy and resilience. Activities of the task force would include inventorying the existing areas in Florida, identifying methods for increasing carbon sequestration, developing standardized methodology, evaluating other ecosystem services such as flood storage and flood resilience, setting benchmark goals for increasing carbon storage, identifying existing carbon markets, and other potential funding mechanisms. This task force would serve for just over 2 years, and there's a fiscal consideration of $350,000 to support research and administrative needs. And that is the bill.
Okay, members, we have questions. Representative Cheney, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. And I apologize, I wasn't able to get to you with my questions because you did come to me and you did ask and you did try, and I've just been really busy with other bills. So have you talked to the member groups that you're suggesting be part of this task force, and have they agreed to provide people for the task force?
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
Thank you for that question. I have talked with members of these agencies. I have not talked specifically on each of these specific task force members. Right now, we're recommending 10. But I did take input from the DEP, from DACS, from Resilient Florida, the head of our resilience department. In this language, I think you'll hear from a speaker that is recommending that maybe there's someone else that could be added to broaden this task force. This is, I think, an attempt to be very inclusive in who would be represented at this.
Follow up?
Yes, recognized.
Are there any other states or programs around the country like this?
You're recognized.
Thank you. The Commonwealth of Virginia did adopt a similar but more pared-down bill just a couple years ago.
Thank you. Representative Steele, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for bringing this great bill. I do have a couple of questions. They're more of a financial component versus the actual bill itself. What is the cost associated to having the task force put in place?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So this bill looks at a $350,000 allocation for the first year. Some of the duties of the task force would include scientific research, going out, potentially taking some carbon data from our wetlands and some of our other areas. So that could be handled either by the agencies involved with this or by procuring those services through private consultants.
Follow up? I don't see any questions. I have a question, Representative Cross. Can you give us any information about other states, other task force? Because my concern is, what is the real goal of the task force? Is it to find better ways to obviously sequester carbon? Mm-hmm. And don't we already know how to do that?
Thank you for that question. So I think there is some knowledge about ways to enhance some of our natural areas and aquaculture. For example, you're thinking, why are clams and oysters? What is their role? They actually take carbon from the water column when they're creating their shells. When we maintain those healthy clam and shell beds, particularly making living shorelines out of it, we're keeping that carbon in those shells themselves. If you look at silviculture or timber operations, there are certain practices such as maintaining native plant species, reducing some of the fertilizer or pesticides use that can have some benefits. Those often can cost more money. And so anytime we can provide incentives through financial mechanisms to agriculture, to aquaculture, helping with the maintenance of our conservation lands, I think that's something that we can do to enhance their productivity. And this would really give us the data and the information, set some standardized methodology so that we could be part of what's called the blue economy and look at some of those funding sources down the road.
I'd like to ask another question, obviously. Thank you, Chair. The thought is that the final end game is to go to carbon credits, that we're going to figure out that agriculture can make money by sequestering carbon, and so we're going to pay farmers to do stuff maybe that they're already doing. But is that the final goal of where we're going? Because I'm a little concerned that I don't think carbon is really the problem, but you understand my question.
I do. Thank you. So this could be one of the recommendations out of the task force. So that's one of the things they would be looking at as existing carbon markets, other potential funding mechanisms. We know that there's carbon dioxide that's being emitted into the atmosphere, and some of these natural and agricultural areas are very effective at storing them. There was a study done in 2012 in Tampa Bay Estuary, which is my home estuary, and the estimates were that the existing seagrass beds in Tampa Bay, if they were maintained at that quality, would be able to sequester as much carbon to offset about 15.5 million cars. And so this is something that would help us to really be a leader in this area. And as you mentioned, if there is a market for a carbon trading or carbon capture system, this would give us the tools to be part of that.
Thank you. Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Going back to the task force, are they paid separately from the employment they have with the state?
Thank you for that question.
Representative Cross, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. That is not how it's contemplated in this. This would be more for support services if they need to contract with private consulting companies to do some of this benchmarking work, go out onto some of these private lands and identify some of these baseline levels to create that baseline. So we would not be giving a pay raise per se to people on this task force, but giving them the funding so that they could have a very robust program.
Members, we're in questions. Questions. One last Representative Steele.
Thank you, Chair. Last question, I promise. Are you contemplating bringing private people onto the board versus just government employees?
Representative Cross, you're recognized.
Thank you. So the task force would, the way it's currently contemplated, would include 10 members. Several of those would be agency heads or their designees from the Department of Environmental Protection, Secretary of Ag, and the head of the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. And then there would also be appointments from those agency heads for working lands, landowners within the estuary programs, aquaculture through the Sea Grant program. So there would be some private landowners or other people involved in the industry being able to lend their expertise.
Members, questions? Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, there are no amendments. We're in public testimony. Up first, we'll hear from Jerry Jones. Jassy Jones. Jassy? Okay. Up next, we have Maya Scherfeld. REFAMU. Okay. Up next, we have Stella Nunez with Rethink Energy Florida. Waving in support. Up next, we have Rick Myers representing themselves. Waving in support. Up next, we have Natalie Cato with Florida Association of Professional Geologists. Ms. Cato, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Buchanan, Vice Chair Roth, Ranking Member Skidmore. I'm Natalie Cato here today on behalf of the Florida Association of Professional Geologists. First, we do want to thank Representative Cross for bringing this bill forward. We do think this is something that should be studied. We think the task force is a great place to start there. We are supportive of this bill, but as I believe Representative Cross mentioned, we think this could be improved by the addition of a professional geologist, also known as a PG, on this task force. Couple of questions just to, or comments to address Representative Cheney's question, I believe. Alabama has actually started a carbon sequestration program. The National Carbon Capture Center is actually located there. And so they are looking at some of these things with agriculture, natural resources. There also is a program that is talking about literally taking carbon out of the air and permanently storing it in the ground. And we're not making a comment on whether that's a good policy or a bad policy. All we're saying is that that probably is something that should be contemplated. We like where Representative Cross is going with the natural ways to do it as well, but that is technology that's out there. But generally, when you're talking about carbon sequestration, we think that a geologist should be involved. And that's because, you know, for a geologist, it's not just simply looking at rocks. These are people who are trained ground and earth scientists. They are uniquely qualified because of their training to make determinations on the nature and the prediction of man-made alterations in the ground. Many geologists in Florida are trained and practice in the subspecialty of hydrogeology. And in layman's terms, that's basically the study of groundwater, how it gets in the ground, how it flows into the subsurface through the aquifers, and how it interacts with soil and rock. And in Florida, this is particularly important because, as you all know, we get our drinking water from the Floridan aquifer, from the groundwater. So we really need to make sure we're protecting that. That's one of the things that geologists do. They tell you where to dig, how to dig, to make sure that you're not hitting the aquifer. And so including a licensed PG on this task force will ensure that any of these technical challenges, some of these concerns about the technology are addressed and thought about. And so we think that it would be proper and it would improve the bill by including them. And thank you for your time. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cato. Members, any questions? Thank you. Up next, we have Ryan Smart with Florida Springs Council. Waving in support. Up next, we have Travis Moore with Defenders of Wildlife. Waving in support. Up next, we have Emma Hadusi with Surfrider Foundation. Waving in support. Up next in public testimony, we have Janet Bowman with the Nature Conservancy. Ms. Bowman, you're recognized.
Good afternoon. I think it just turned afternoon. Chair Buchanan, Vice Chair Roth, Ranking Member Skidmore, and members of the committee. I'm Janet Bowman with the Nature Conservancy, and we're here to support House Bill 1187 and thank Representative Cross for sponsoring this great bill. We believe that the creation of a carbon sequestration task force to develop recommendations for a statewide program will assist agricultural landowners and public and private entities working on coastal restoration in their quest to develop carbon sequestration projects as part of their restoration and agricultural activities. We also believe that carbon sequestration offers opportunities for farmers, ranchers, and foresters to bolster the economic value of the suite of agricultural and ecosystem services provided by their land, and in addition, that many of the management practices that enhance carbon sequestration in agriculture build resilience into their operations. So not only are you capturing more carbon, but you're actually enhancing the productivity of the agriculture. We ask for your support of this great bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman.
Can I ask you a question?
Ms. Bowman, stick around. Representative Roth, you're recognized.
I'm sorry, tell me your name again.
Janet Bowman.
Bowman, okay. Well, there's some Bowmans in Palm Beach County, so anyway. farmers, too, by the way. I have a little bit left-field question for you. You know, pretty much everything you said was agriculture. What do you think about an interesting concept of having the sequestration program be part of our Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services rather than DEP? Just a thought. What do you think?
Ms. Bowman, you're recognized.
Well, I will say that I guess DACS is implementing a forest carbon sequestration program today. There are
there are certainly marine and coastal sequestration opportunities that are just as promising as agriculture. So I think this really transcends one particular agency, and that's my comment.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman. Appreciate that. Up next in public testimony, we have David Cullen with the Sierra Club. Waiving in support, is there any further public testimony? Seeing no further public testimony, members were in debate. Representative Funchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cross, I just want to thank you for all the work you've done on this. I could tell by your presentation how well-versed you are on this. And I love, instead of reacting, that we're thinking prospectively and thinking about the future and thinking about ways that Florida can lead in a way that many other states can't. So I just want to thank you for all your hard work on this. I also want to thank the chair for hearing this really good bill, and I look forward to supporting it.
Members, we're in debate. Vice Chair Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to make a couple of comments. Representative Cross, part of the reason that I'm supporting the bill today is your name as Representative Cross. I've worked with you before you were a state representative. I know you really care about the environment and the state of Florida and preserving our wildlife and all kinds of issues that we've worked together on, conservation lands and things like that. So with that in mind, I took a second look at your bill and decided it was worth supporting. But I will say, I guess the word is but, what I will say is I am concerned about do-gooder, and I'm not talking about us as representatives, we're all doing good, but I'm talking about, you know, scientists that are predisposed to trying to solve the world's problems and presuppose that carbon is the problem. I'm not sure that carbon or carbon dioxide is the problem. I'm actually part of the group of people that believes if you want to save the planet, you have more food and more energy. And when people make more money, they care more about their neighborhoods, their communities, and their water supply. So I'm a little concerned, and I'm voicing this to you, Representative Cross. Please, let's make sure that as we go forward with this program, that we do stay on task, which is to learn what can be done. I think this is an information process, and I don't want us to jump to, oh, let's do a carbon credit because we already know the answer kind of mentality. So with that, I'm up on the bill, but I am concerned because I will tell you all the research I do, and by the way, folks, I don't know if you know this or not. You know I'm a farmer, but you know what I know more about than you do? The weather. I make my money with the weather and understanding how the weather works and where we're going and climate change and temperature increases. I spend a lot of time with that, and I'm here to tell you more of it is talk than it is real substance. And so I want to walk carefully here, but I am supporting the bill today. Thank you.
Representative Trunow in debate.
Thank you, Representative Cross, for bringing this bill and reaching out to me yesterday. I haven't researched this bill as much as I'd like to. I'd like to research it more and go over it with you. Have conversations about real ag issues because that's very much part of what you're talking about today. So I look forward to that. I'll be up today, but I have some concerns as well. Thank you.
Ranking Member Skidmore in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we're so lucky to have an expert, a subject matter expert in the House to talk to us about these issues, these very important environmental issues. So important to this committee. I want to make note that there is a report due on October 1st, 2026, for those of us who are still here. I think that it would be important for us to see the results of that report so that we can make great recommendations going forward as to what the state of Florida should be doing. So thank you very much for bringing this good bill, Rep. Cross. Thank you for being our subject matter expert on these issues, and we look forward to what that report can bring to us to make good public policy in this area.
Representative Alvarez in debate.
Thank you. I was also going to jump on the Love Fest for you and your passion. It is good to have an expert, not only in the environment, but in the weather, fine, sir. So clearly, let's just start off with, I'm a yes, all right? So let's start there. To continue this, in my mind's eye, to get certain constituencies to get to a full yes on the floor, we have to address the very real thing that is how this is going to affect our local agriculturalists and making sure that what we're not doing is a Trojan horse way of bringing in more rules and regulations onto them that would become onerous. We know that we are trying to protect Florida agriculture in a manner that may be unprecedented because it faces unprecedented threats, and that is our food supply. Maybe your argument would be, well, we can't breathe, we can't eat, so they're kind of both levels of importance. But the reality of the matter for me is this may be a way that farmers can supplement income, and we're not sure. I just want to echo in the sense of my fellow comrades, treading carefully to make sure that we do this in a manner that includes all stakeholders, that agriculture, cattle, Florida, DACs, geologists, everyone has a real voice in this task force to make sure that we come with a balanced approach and that we make sure we're doing this for not only just the best of a viewpoint, but the best of the state of Florida. So thank you and congratulations.
Members, we're in debate. Any further debate? Representative Steele.
Thank you for bringing this bill. I'm all up on saving the environment, but I echo everybody else's concerns. I'm a farmer. I have farmland, not necessarily in Florida, but I do have cattle in Florida. And so I just want to make sure that this is not going to come in the back door and rob the ability to have that. You know, agriculture is the single largest economic driver for the state of Florida. It's larger than entertainment. It's larger than vacations. It's the single largest economic driver for the state. So I just want to make sure that we don't have an effect on that long term. But I am a yes today. So thank you.
Members, debate. Any further debate? See no further debate. Representative Cross, you're recognized to close.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate all the questions in the debate. I can tell you that I come to this from a very sincere desire to protect what all of us here in our state care about, our natural areas, our agriculture, the ability of farmers and ranchers in timber plantations and clam farmers to continue to do what they're doing. So I can assure you this is not a back way of trying to further regulate or minimize the ability of them to do what they're doing, but this is rather a way to support some of the excellent programs that we have. We invest money each year in conservation through the Florida Forever program, through Rural and Family Lands, for other programs through DACs. And so I think if anything, this is going to be supportive of those efforts. That is one of the reasons why I was intentional about the task force makeup to include designees through Sea Grant, through IFAS, through working lands, which could be cattle or timber, potentially involving geologists, looking at people from the estuary programs who have knowledge of the seagrasses in those local environments. And so we want this to be an inclusive process and for the task force to develop those recommendations. And potentially a carbon market may not be what we need here in Florida, but maybe there's other things that come out of that study. But I think it's important that we bring experts to the table to do this analysis and come back to us in 2 years with that report. So I think this really is an opportunity for Florida to be at the forefront. I think we can leapfrog over Alabama and Virginia. Looking at things like the blue economy and taking advantage of any potential new funding mechanisms we have. Our farmers and ranchers are not just putting food on our table, but maintaining productive and working landscapes is helping to provide us with so many other benefits, just like our parks and preserves do. So I think this task force will only help those efforts. And so with your support of this program today, you'll be supporting our environment, our farmers, and essentially all of us here in Florida. So thank you very much.
Missy, please call the roll.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Alvarez?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Cruzada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Panchofsky?
Yes.
Keene?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trunell?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
19 yes.
Members, by your vote, show the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations, thank Representative you. Cross. And I'm going to ask you to stick around because we have another bill, actually a House memorial, that will keep you up here for, it's actually Representative Cross and Burfield. You are recognized to explain House Memorial 1411, Shoreline Protections.
Well, thank you very much again to present this House Memorial 1411, one of the co-sponsors here, Representative Cheney, thank you. So more than anything, Florida is known for our beaches. We are blessed with having about 825 miles of beautiful sand beaches, but unfortunately, more than half of those beach miles are what is considered critically eroded. And that means that without periodic sand placement, those beaches, the wildlife habitat they support, and the private and publicly owned infrastructure and properties behind those beaches, without that periodic sand placement, will eventually wash away into the sea. Beach renourishment projects are incredibly expensive, and they take years of planning. Funding for these projects has often been a combination of local, state, and federal funds. As a state, in recent years, we've allocated about $50 million a year for these projects. But just for instance, an 8.6-mile stretch of beach on Sand Key in Representative Burfield's district has a price tag of $44 million. So $50 million from the state cannot address the backlog of projects that we have. So to balance this, local sponsors can work with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to develop and implement the project, and a resulting federal match is usually 50% or more of the total project cost. These projects involving placing sand onto designated beaches to reduce erosion and rebuild areas that have been lost. Size really does matter for these projects, as well as continuity. So if you have a 10-mile stretch of beach, that will likely include public parks, hotels, beachfront restaurants, and some single-family homes or condos. Finding the harmony between public access, private property rights, and wise use of taxpayer dollars has always been a delicate balance, but it's something that our local counties and municipalities have been able to strike. Recently, the Jacksonville District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has instituted a strict policy requiring perpetual easements, that means forever, from 100% of the property owners within a project area. So that means if even one property owner within a 10-mile stretch of beach does not want to sign a document allowing access to their private property forever, then the entire project cannot move forward. Local partners would be forced to foot the entire bill, and they would also jeopardize federal funding in the case of disaster recovery from hurricanes. Prior to this policy shift, local partners were able to craft solutions with their residents. For instance, some cities and counties used shorter-term 50-year easements. Any private portions landward of the coastal high hazard area, the mean high water area, could be paid solely from the local sponsor, and then they would also have the option of doing a special taxing district on private property if they wanted to recoup those costs. In short, they were able to strike the balance and make sure that those miles of beach could be repaired. Of 27 current projects within the Jacksonville District, 19 are non-policy compliant for various reasons as determined by the Corps. These include popular beaches in Palm Beach, Brevard, St. John's, Lee, Sarasota, Manatee, and Pinellas counties. And without a change in policy, these projects cannot move forward. So what this memorial does is it urges Congress to direct the Corps to change its policy so that these renourishment projects can proceed without delay. It is important that we pass this memorial this year because language to change this restrictive policy can be included in the Water Resources Development Act, or WRDA, which is up for reauthorization this year. Our Senators Scott and Rubio, as well as some members of our Florida congressional delegation, are already engaged in this issue, and this memorial will support their efforts and also urge them to act with authority to quickly rectify this problem. And that is the memorial.
Thank you for that, Representative. Thank you for that, Representative Cross. Members, we're in questions. Are there questions? Representative Steele.
Thank you for bringing this. I think it's important that we do things to preserve the beaches in our state. One thing I would ask that you do some research on is the dredging areas that they pull from off of Boca Grande. I guess it's not a question.
Okay, let's save it for debate then. Members, are we in questions? Do we have any questions? Any further questions? No further questions. We do have an amendment. Representative Cross, you are recognized to explain barcode 415479.
Thank you, Chair. This is a technical amendment that simply fixes a few grammatical errors.
Thank you for that. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, we're in public testimony. No public testimony. Debate? Any debate? No debate on the amendment. You're recognized to close.
I'll waive close.
Is there any opposition to the amendment? Seeing no opposition, let's show the amendment is adopted. Now we're on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the House Memorial? Up first, we have Rick Myers representing themselves, waiving in support. Up next, we have Jeff Scalia with Florida Association of Counties, waiving in support. Up next, we have Pepperoncino with Florida Shore and Beach Preservation Association.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members. I will be brief. I just really wanted to thank you for hearing this memorial. I think sometimes you feel like you might be shouting into the void with memorials, but I think this one actually has a chance to gain some purchase. I've been working extensively with the senators and with the congressional delegation, and this issue has some real traction up in D.C. So thank you so much for your support, for your co-sponsorships, Rep. Cheney, and Representative Moody and Representative Burfield, and thank Representative Cross for spearheading this effort. It's really, really critical to Florida that we can get some real work and some positive movement through WERDA in this particular legislative session. So thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Travis Moore, Defenders of Wildlife, waving in support. Up next, we have Frank Bernardino with Palm Beach County, waving in support. Is there any further public testimony? Seeing no further public testimony, members, we're in debate. Representative Steele, you're in debate.
So the only thing I want to add to what I was starting to ask as a question, which it wasn't, thank you, Chair, by the way, is that where they're dredging, they're supposed to be outside the second reef line that's off the coast of Florida on the east side, and they're not. They're in front of both of them. So the sediment that they disbar is actually killing the reefs. So I just want to make sure that when we do these memorials that we also push that they are regulated. Thanks.
Members, debate. Any further debate? Seeing no further debate. Representative Burfield, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, members. The one thing I'd like to point out here is, if you haven't noticed, this is a bipartisan effort. This is something that we can easily come together and actually have a true impact for our constituents. This gives us the opportunity to actually send an important message to our federal partners so they understand the importance that we see in ensuring our constituents' private property rights, but also at the same time protecting one of our most valuable natural resources, our beaches. So today, I am pleased to close on this bill and ask you not only for your favorable support, but ask you if you specifically live in a community where you represent some part of our shoreline, please join us as a co-sponsor. We want to make sure that we send a very loud and clear message to our federal partners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Missy, please call the roll.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Alvarez?
Yes.
Antone? Bartleman? Botana?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Quesada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Hunchovsky?
Yes.
Keene?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trunell?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
17 yes, 0 no.
Thank you. Congratulations. Up next, we'll be hearing from our very own Representative Tuck. Representative Tuck, you are recognized to explain House Bill 1051, Housing for Agricultural Workers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. HB 1051 is a bill relating to ag worker housing that is a culmination of feedback from farmers across Florida. It specifies that construction or installation of housing for migrant farm workers who are legally eligible to participate in the workforce is authorized on land that has an ag classification and is operated as a bona fide farm. The housing must meet specific construction, setback, and screening requirements. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Tuck. Members, we're in questions. Questions of the sponsor? Any questions? Seeing no questions, we do have an amendment. Representative Tuck, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 221233.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment is technical in nature and fixes some grammatical errors.
Thank you for that explanation. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Any questions? Public testimony on the amendment? No public testimony. We're in debate. Debate on the amendment? No debate on the amendment. You're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Waving close. Is there any opposition? Any opposition? Seeing no opposition, let's show the bill is amended. Is there public testimony on the bill as amended? Please show the amendment is adopted. We're in public testimony on the bill as amended. Up first, we have Jim Spratt with Florida Nurseries, Growers, and Landscape Association. Waving in support. Up next, we have Adam Bassford with Associated Industries of Florida, waving in support. Up next, we had Andrew Walmsky with Florida Farm and Farm Bureau Federation, waving in support. Up next, we have Trip Hunter, Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association, waving in support. Up next, we have David Hill with Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association. Mr. Hill, you are recognized. Mr. Hill, please turn on the mic. Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm sorry. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on this bill. Real quick, I'm here as the chairman of the Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association. But I'm the chair of that association because I'm a farmer in Central Florida. I learned to farm on Lake Apopka, Zellwood area, growing sweet corn, carrots, and radishes. This farm's closed down in 98, and in 99, we bought a piece of land in South Lake County. And it's currently, we commercially grow and harvest blueberries and strawberries, and we have a growing agritourism business as well there. So. This all the quick history on this bill, much needed bill. A year ago, I was asked to come and testify to the Senate Ag Committee on kind of the state of the Florida ag, and so I did that. And the committee started asking me, what can I give them? What can they do to help Florida ag? I wasn't expecting that. So I said, the one thing that's on my mind is housing. Without the ability to house and secure a harvest labor pool, and housing is a big part of that, there really is no point in growing the crop, because without the harvest, there is no profit. And so what this bill does is gives the farmer another tool to stay in business. You know, there are everybody in the state wants farmers to stay here. You just heard about how important farm is for the environment, and it's a huge part of it's a huge part of the state. So I think that we need to do anything we can to make it more profitable, at least to allow the farmer to stay in business, and any tool we can come up with to that makes sense to make it more profitable to keep the farmer here, makes sense. Yeah, there are easements, conservation easements. Those are great. A farmer can only say yes to a conservation easement if he's making a profit. If he's not making a profit, he's going to sell his land to a developer. So I'm all for easements. I'm more for staying in business. I've got my kids are part of our farm. We fend off people looking to buy, because we're in the Orlando area, and we fend off people that want to buy our property weekly, if not monthly. I tell them, no, go away, because our plan is to farm. But you can only do that as long as you're profitable. So this is a tool, a common sense tool to me, to allow the farms to secure their labor and to harvest their crop. So I appreciate you guys for listening to this. Representative Tuck for sponsoring it. Thank you very much. And I came up here a year ago not knowing how this works. Very impressed with the fact that we started a conversation, and the Senate Ag Committee jumped on it and saw the need and responded, and now it's grown to a bill. So I appreciate it very much.
Mr. Hill, thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Jeff Scalia, Florida Association of Counties. Mr. Scalia, you're recognized.
And thank you, Chair. Jeff Scalia, Florida Association of Counties. And thank you, Representative Tuck, for the bill, working with us. And of course, the Florida Association of Counties it stands in strong support of our agriculture community, our farmers, in maintaining access to have additional housing for our workers in the ag industry. The bill does provide reasonable guardrails for that, that Representative Tuck mentioned, on acreage, on setback and buffer, and we stand in strong support of the bill here today. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Any further public testimony? Seeing no further public testimony, members, we're now in a debate. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Tuck, for this great bill. Thank you, David Hill, for coming up and testifying. I cannot emphasize strongly enough. I'm a farmer in the Everglades agricultural area. We are the largest producer of food and fiber east of California, over 500,000 acres in production, a lot of big agriculture, and for many years now, 5 years at least, there has been no local worker supply. H-2A bringing in using the federal program to bring in mostly people from Mexico to harvest our vegetable crops. I've been doing that for 4 years. I bring in 300 people in my company. We just had a shooting at our labor camp in Bohokie 2 months ago, and everybody threatened to go home. Folks don't understand, there is no availability of workers to harvest crops called local Americans. None. Building housing is going to make the difference whether a lot of us stay in business in the vegetable business. The sugarcane business has gone from H-2A workers cutting sugarcane by hand to all mechanical. And if we run out of workers, I'll just be growing sugarcane. We cannot survive without housing. People do not know. And guess what's the most connected thing? I'll get political for 10 seconds. Immigration. Illegal immigration is undermining our ability in Congress, in my opinion, to pass reasonable legislation for H-2A. We need to double, triple, quadruple the amount of workers that can come under H-2A. But first, we got to have the ability to build housing. This bill passes and becomes law. Within a year, I will have H-2A housing on my farm in Palm Beach County. Please support this legislation. Thank you.
Members, debate. Any further debate? Representative Alvarez.
I'll be quick. I heard someone say, I got to go to lunch. Last year, we took on immigration as a body, and we had policy. And that was right to do. But the consequence of doing that meant that we put the workers, some of who were in our fields, out, and gave the ability to bring in legal workers and made it more difficult without giving them an option to have housing, housing being the preeminent part of how that works. This is a cry from the fields. You heard a farmer who is a representative as well. It's not the only one. Every time we did our legislative updates this year, it was loud. It was very intense. This will drive businesses to close that are agriculture in nature. If we do not tell farmers that they can actually participate in that program to bring workers in, we might as well just give them the slip and let developers take over their land, because that's literally what's going to happen if we don't pass this. Thank you.
Members in debate, any further debate? Representative Tuck, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll make it very brief. This has been a labor of love for the past 2 years, and I appreciate everybody's support last year, and I'd appreciate it again this year. Thank you.
Missy, please call the roll.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Alvarez?
Yes.
Antone? Bartleman?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Posada Cabrera?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Hunchovsky?
Yes.
Keene?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Buchanan?
Yes. Members, by your vote, show the bill is reported favorably with a committee substitute. Congratulations, Representative Tuck. Members, that's the last bill for the day. Next week, we're going to get started early in the week. Look forward to seeing you then. With no objection, Representative Hunchovsky moves, we rise.